What if this isn't a climate crisis, but the greatest opportunity humanity has had in a long time? Lean Into Clean will explore and discuss with highly esteemed guests on what could be the new spirals for society, sustainability, spirituality, and social harmony. Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural ways so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. And have we got something exciting in store for you today? Gosh, I mean, today's guest, I'm going to jump straight into it, has been doing something that genuinely excites me on a very personal level. Spending the last decade at Harvard applying hard neuroscience to the ancient art of meditation, his peer-reviewed findings have turned heads around the world, and this month he's published a landmark new study that answers, actually I think for the very first time, with scientific rigour, one of the most searched questions in wellness. We'll get to that answer, and I promise it will surprise you, but today we have Dr. Bala Subramaniam. Welcome.
Thank you, Jarvis. Thank you for that warm welcome.
Not at all. Is there anything you'd just like to share with our listeners that just gives you the credentials to talk about what we're going to talk about today? Just give us a little bit of your introduction and background.
Thank you, Jarvis. I'm a professor of anesthesiology at Harvard Medical School. Almost 14 years ago, I asked a question: how does anesthesia actually cause unconsciousness other than all the chemical pieces, and what is consciousness all about? So I was seeking that answer from a bunch of really good neuroscientists. Then I also met the spiritual master for my own personal growth. And then I figured out that he said, nothing can touch consciousness. All you're doing with your chemical drugs is only, it just takes away the memory, and consciousness is something that cannot be touched. That's not the way the medical professionals look at consciousness as. Mm-hmm. We think of that as a product of brain activity and something that comes out. So you're aware of yourself and you're aware of your surroundings. So that just put me in this path, and I've been at it for almost 14 years, looking at it various different ways as to what is it that the modern science cannot explain. And it seems like there are gaps that modern science cannot explain brain as a source of consciousness. We have done, with my own personal transformation for the first 7-8 years, I just shut myself up. I didn't open my mouth. But then later on, I thought I should really combine my profession and passion, because I've been a researcher and a clinician for a long time, almost 26 years now. Mm-hmm. At Harvard Medical School and Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, which is where I work as a clinician. And in the last 7-8 years, we have done education, bringing conversations between very well-established neuroscientists and this eloquent spiritual master to the table, and just discussing about consciousness per se, like what is it? What are the gaps in our understanding? Why do we have to merge Eastern and Western concepts? For example, consciousness can be explained as a holistic way using Eastern traditions, because spirituality is very experiential and exponential. Yeah. Whereas science is incremental, and it is responsible. It just goes for tests and repeated tests and repeatability there. So I think we need to have both in order to explain and help everyone.
Yeah.
So I do think that that's what set us in path. For the last 7 years, we have been not only doing education, but also research, looking at one of the meditation techniques from the Isha lineage, which is very ancient, which is very traditional, which has both free and other very nominally paid practices. We have been doing meditation research from the neuropsychological point of view, from the neuroimaging point of view, using functional MRI, high-density EEG, blood biomarkers. And what we have been finding is incredible. It seems like it's very fundamental. It changes mind, body, energy, emotions at will. So something very, very fundamental, it changes or shifts the center from which you operate. You do the same things that you're doing currently, but with a different understanding of right what life is all about. We just saw the Artemis II crew, you know, when they landed, everybody's talking spirituality. Whatever they talked sounded spirituality to me. It's called the overview effect. And so when you see the world from up top, then you suddenly realize, you're just that, just a mud ball. And then suddenly you start asking very deeper questions. So our credentials, we have published almost 25, 26 papers in this area right now, looking at gut, you know, brain connections, looking at high-density EEG, looking at functional MRI, blood biomarkers like proteomics and transcriptomics, et cetera. So
Lovely.
yeah, I enjoy what I'm doing because it's very satisfying in many, many ways.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand that. So thank you for that really, really efficient introduction. I much to share with you, and I think it's important for you to know because this it will deepen our conversation. I am a practicing meditator and a yogi. I've been actually practicing the very practice that you have studied. My daughter's
Wonderful.
now 18, and I started when she was 3. So for 15 years, I've been practicing what's described as inner engineering,
Yeah.
and I was taught it through Sadhguru's training. And the reason I did it is because I wanted to go to the ashram, and I needed to be there for a week. And at the time, you could only go to the ashram if you'd actually practiced inner engineering. So the only reason I did it was because I wanted to go to the Bhairavi consecration at
Yeah.
Isha in Tamil Nadu. And would you believe I've done it every day since, apart from, the odd day here or there where it's kind of
Amazing.
impossible. So I just wanted to share
Amazing.
that with you. So you're talking to somebody that not only is inquisitive about this, but is a practitioner. So I thought that would give you hopefully a bit of an insight to me. But let's just look at this for a second. For someone who has never meditated, or who thinks of it as trying not to think, because I think that's kind of what people think is like, okay, how do I not think? First of all, what is actually happening in the brain when you practice meditation? What is going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. We can look at it from the point of view of neuroimaging and also from the point of view of what actually is happening to the individual himself or herself. So, what we did recently is took some data from National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences that had done some incredible work looking at novices, people who are starting to meditate, and people who have done it for a long time, and people who have never done it, just doing it for the first time. So we took the data and just asked a different question to see the signatures of meditation, the EEG signatures of meditation in the brain. And these are very high-density EEG. That means that you get a very high-resolution data. And you can actually see temporally from the time you start, you know, closing your eyes and how long it takes to see these EEG signatures. Generally, across all lineages in the whole world, it is known that there is increased alpha waves and the theta waves. Okay, what are these waves? In general, we are talking now, we are using something called beta waves. It's a frequency around 20 hertz, something like that, right? It's 20 cycles per second, and that is a frequency at which the brain is firing. When I say alpha waves, you're going almost halfway down, something around 10 to 12 hertz. So you're doing the same activity. You said you've been practicing meditation for 13 years or 15 years. It's very likely that your brain activity or cycles at which the neurons are firing is almost around half of what is normally done by others who don't have any contemplative practices. And these waves, alpha and theta waves, when somebody does it for the first time or somebody does it over a long period of time and then doing it, we are measuring it. It takes almost 3 minutes to start seeing these EEG signatures. And what does that mean? That you just get into a state of relaxed alertness. What does relaxed alertness mean? You're doing the same thing that you're doing, hosting a radio show, but in a very relaxed manner. So you're focused on the things that you want to do. There's a very famous football player called Tom Brady. You know, he's very widely followed in NFL in the US, and it sounds very spiritual. I've been following him for almost 10, 15 years, and he told me something that, not me, but the in the radio, he was talking about how the games get slower as it gets very intense. So what does that mean? It's almost like time dilation, right? You are in the moment and you are just focused so much on that thing that you're focused on. So the relaxed alertness gives you something like that state. You're still able to do that same work, but in an alert, in a very relaxed manner. Let's say that many of us want to have that state, right? Like if you take surgeons, I work with many surgeons across the world, they live and die for those deep moments, which is very complex for them. When they are in that situation, the time and the space disappears. When the time and space disappears, they are in it so deep in it, they enjoy that. And that is, in a way, you know, whether you're a dancer or whether you're a skater, you know, whether you're a sports person, we're all looking for those deeper moments. But in order to be in that 24 by 7, you can't be dancing or doing the art for 24 by 7. Whereas meditation gives you that route, you know, how many ever times you want to have that state, you can get back into it in a given day. And maybe it lasts longer as well. So the EEG starts, the signature starts appearing at about third minute and peaks at around 7 minutes
Oh, does it?
and lasts for almost 14 minutes. So it's almost like an invitation to people who commonly tell me that, hey, you know, I can't meditate because I can't shut my brain. I can't stop my thinking process, and it's not for me. The second most common thing that people tell us is, well, you know, I'm in a good state of mind. I really don't need it. So the answer to both, the first one is, we need to break that myth that meditation is not about shutting your brain completely, your thoughts. You know, the spiritual master Sadhguru, which you and I follow, he says that every organ does its own work, and brain's work is to produce thoughts. And we're not stopping every organ's work. So just forget about it. Let it do whatever it is doing. What we are striving for is a separation, a distance between who you are and what is yours, that is your thoughts and your you know, your body. So you, when you actually deeply get into these states, you are here, your body's there, and your thoughts are there in three different places. When you achieve that, it's almost like you're not, you're driving in the traffic, but still you're not caught in the traffic. You are able to fly a little higher and watch the traffic. And so you're not, you know, twisting and turning and having all kinds of sympathetic and parasympathetic responses within your body. So that is basically what is happening in the brain and what is happening to a person and the common things that we just talked about. So that's what I would say, that that myth that I want to stop your thoughts should stop. The next part, the next set of people who say that I really don't need it, for them, the answer is you really don't have not explored the human potential of yours, right? Everybody has a different potential. Maybe you're in an optimal state now, maybe you aren't. And it is possible that when you reach such high states, deeper states in your brain, you can do more things. So it's all about exploring the human potential to its fullest. And so give yourself an opportunity to see what it is like.
Yeah,
The
absolutely brilliant.
physiological, yeah, the physiological example I can give you is, as an anesthesiologist, I'm always looking at brain's blood flow, right? And that is what my job is, to keep a brain unconscious. But we are talking here about consciousness. About 50% of oxygen that is supplied to the brain is utilized for normal activities. The only other organ that consumes more oxygen is the heart itself. It consumes about 75% of oxygen that is supplied. You still have that margin. But remember, if you're going to go into the most fatiguing day for you, is the day when you do your mental activity, right? In your office, you're working with your, you know, research or something else. That is more fatiguing than the physical activity itself. Why? Because of this increased amount of oxygen is used. So if you can function efficiently with less requirements, with less mental activity in the background, with less mental diarrhea, now you're enhancing your ability to do more things with the same person that you are. So I do think that these are all the things that are often missed by many people. Now with this work, it's an invitation to them. You set your tone for the day by just, doing practices like Miracle of Mind, which is basically 7-minute meditative process. It's a guided meditation. The National Institute of Health from the US talks about, for all novices, the way to begin meditation is to do guided meditation. And the guided meditation, just follow instructions. You don't have to do anything yourself. Just follow instructions, right? And when you follow that instruction, again, everybody says in the world, just watch your breath. It's not an easy thing to do. If you can't just sit and watch your breath, then you'll start breathing on your own. The key is to watch your spontaneous breath without meddling with it. And how do you actually do that? It seems like things like Miracle of Mind will put you in that space after the 7-minute period when you sit quietly, you're automatically watching your breath. And now we just recently talked about when you watch your breath, you can manipulate your breath, right? You can slow down your breath. When the breath slows down, you will see there are four phases in your breath. There's 1 second of inspiration. There's a very small fraction of a second which goes into inspiratory pause. There's about 2 seconds of expiration, and there's another 1 second of expiratory pause. So you will start noticing this. When you start noticing this and actually be aware of it, you can actually trigger your vagus nerve, the one that balances your, the sympathetic overdrive that you have. And vagus nerve is called vagus nerve because it's like vagabond. It just goes all over the body. And medulla, which is part of the brain, which has all these packed, centers for cardiovascular and breathing responses, triggers this vagus nerve, and then you find that balance between the yin and yang and the sympathetic and parasympathetic that you really need. The people are chasing heart rate variability. Everybody's wearing these wearables right now, and they're looking at a single parameter. So one way is to do your sympathetic overdrive by doing a physical activity, but you also bring your parasympathetics into play, then now you go back and forth in a very large manner, and you have this good heart rate variability. It's a good thing to have.
Yeah, bringing balance, and I love that. I mean, there's loads of things that come out from what you've said. I mean, I've heard people talk about flow states. So you're getting yourself into this flow state, and runners talk about it. Athletes, as you said, Tom Brady. I'm sure there were many other examples. I love what you've said also about thoughts, that we are separate from our thoughts. Most people listening will probably believe that their thoughts control them. That seems to be the human condition, and I know because of I'm well practiced that you can actually choose whether you follow a thought or not, because there is that moment when the thought comes, you can choose to engage with it or not, and often you engage with it, and then you go off down the slippery path of thoughts, and of course that can be multiple. So just to bring that to the awareness, and also I love the fact that you've talked about brain and heart and that connection there, because of course, when you do start meditating, often there is a practice where you bring the brain and the heart together, or the mind and the heart together. I'm loving this. This is fantastic. We're at that time, Dr. Bali, where we're going to have to go to a commercial break. But what I'd like to do when we come back is talk about the the specific. Excuse me. Sorry, the specific studies that you've been doing with Sadhguru's practices. So we'll talk about Samyama and the inner engineering, which is the one that I've done. Why these and what makes them scientifically interesting. So don't go away. We're going to come back and find out specifically about these two absolutely brilliant practices. So don't go away.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Just for anybody listening out there, there is a very wise Indian, I guess he's a spiritual teacher, Sadhguru. He chooses not to call himself a guru, actually, but his name is Sadhguru. But he runs an operation, lots of operations, but one in particular called Isha Foundation. So anybody that's interested in what you're listening to, you can check out the Isha Foundation. And I think the Miracle of Mind is a new app that is available that you can download, which has this 7-minute meditation. But let's just talk about these particular practices that you've been studying. So which should we start with, Dr. Bali? You've got the Samyama, which you can explain, and then the inner engineering, which I know well, but of course, our listeners probably won't.
Yeah, let's start with inner engineering, right?
Okay.
So because it's a very fundamental beginning practice. It's not just beginning, it can be all end all, you know, it's just something to begin with. So inner engineering is a practice which is supposed to cause a complete overhaul of mind, body, energy, emotions. I'm paraphrasing Sadhguru here, but it's also my experience that if you think of life as got four wheels, like a car, and you have one that is mind, another one is body, another one is energy and emotions. We all know the four-wheel car, the rear-wheel car, the front-wheel car, and all of that. So which wheel is driving you in front? If the emotions are the ones that are driving you in front, then you're going to be very emotionally charged and your decisions will be based on that. If mind is there, then you'll be very intellectual and maybe that's your decision-making for everything. You'll be too logical. Recently, in a conversation with Steven Pinker, Sadhguru was saying, logic is the foundation of life on which you stand and enjoy the magic.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't live in the foundation, right? So you can't live in the logic, but it is the firmness on which you stand upon. It's a brilliant analogy where I look back upon that if you're going to just box yourself into logic, the fullness of life might be missed. You need it, but on which you stand on. The next is the energy. Why I'm phrasing this, I'll just follow as to what it is. If you can lead your life with energy, then it's a very different thing. So what I'm trying to say is, paraphrasing him again, that you need all four components, but in the right composition, and let your energy lead the car. Be the lead wheel driving your car.
Yeah.
So along those lines, we phrased or framed our questions for these inner engineering practitioners. And people who just voluntarily took these practices, we looked at them. We start off with just neuropsychological tests. What we did was self-reported answers, and we studied in hundreds of participants. The first thing is negativity. Negativity starts as in stress, anxiety, depression. There are so many other things like fatigue, etc. But we'll just say these are the three common things that people go through.
Yeah.
What stresses me may not stress you. So that's why perceived stress is the terminology that we use, you know, the perception. Then anxiety, which almost almost everybody in the world right now seems to have. And then the other one is depression. Any way you slice and dice this data, that is the first three things to go down. The negativity is the first thing to drop when you start doing this practices routinely. What do I mean by routine? It seems like at least 5 days a week, it's a 21-minute practice. And doing it at least, let's say, 6 weeks or so, you start seeing these benefits. But this negativity will go down within like 2 weeks of starting these practices. The first one to drop off. Fascinating. And in another parallel study that we did in doctors, anesthesiologists, and nurses and surgeons, what we found was just doing another guided meditation called Isha Kriya, just that moment they do it, the total mood disturbances score goes down. Therefore, the negativity goes down in them right away. So the stress, anxiety, depression, going back to the inner engineering, the first three things. Then we talk about positivity, vigor, energy, work engagement. You can think name of any of that, right? That takes time to build. And as you keep doing your practices at least 5 days a week, let's say, or 6 weeks or so, then suddenly you'll start seeing that all these numbers go up. There's suddenly more, there's more vigor in them, there's more energy in them. You know, you are in these circles, you might have heard anecdotally that many people are talking about how their activity levels have gone up without them realizing it. Mm-hmm. The number of things that they do in a day in a conscious way has just suddenly gone up. So that's an indication of how energy levels go up in them. The third phase is awareness. And we measure awareness by using a validated scale called Mindful Awareness Scale. And that also increases as they keep practicing over 6 weeks. And then we follow these people up until 1 year, six mm-hmm. months and 1 year. Steady, keep increasing. Their awareness keeps increasing. I think of this as a flashlight within yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You see yourself so clearly. It's completely lit up. You know your negativities and you know your positivities. You know your strengths and you know your weaknesses of yourself. And now you know happily how can you go and fix it. And you're not suffering those things, but you're fixing them in a very strategic, systematic way. And so therefore, the joy in these people when we measure, it also is going up. The well-being measures, whichever way, WHO well-being or global well-being scales, et cetera, that keeps increasing. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the negativity, we talked about the positivity, we talked about the awareness, and then the ability to increase your joy state. You know, joy is very different from pleasure. And while pleasure is, you know, a good state of emotions and they get pleasant, you have that. But joy is a much more vibrant state of, you know, satisfied emotions, if you will. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now we then escalate to say, all right, let's just go look at emotions by themselves using the emotional scales. The recent Harvard study that was published a few years ago talks about, it's a longitudinal study done over 70 years. And it talks about what is the biggest predictor of longevity and happiness. And the biggest predictor of that was a good family, a connected family, something, a very meaningful interaction and connection, not just a superficial take care kind of thing, but very beautiful interconnectedness is what it did. So we looked at the interconnectedness scale, and what we found was we were mindful. Now we are in a conversation. We look at each other and we listen to you. When I've decided that I'm going to listen to you, I'm not going to just, you know, sit on my phone and do something else. So you need to be engaged. And that interconnectedness goes up. I'm passionate. I'm listening to you. When that happens, suddenly the relationships, quality and quantity. We did both qualitative studies and quantitative studies. We found that whether it is a relationship between child and mother, my own son told me after I started doing these practices 10 years ago, it looks like you are now, you know, in a good place where I can communicate everything with you. Mm. So I was shocked with that. I'm like, wow. They always say kids watch you. They don't follow your instructions and they're watching you.
Yes.
And that kind of this relation, and whether it's work or whether it is home or wherever else, suddenly the relationship quality just goes multifolds up. So everything you taken together, all this self-reported neuropsychological testing just proves whichever way you slice and dice, it's going to be good for you in, you know, at the very least, even if you don't do anything else, you'll be a better person, I think.
Yeah, I can absolutely relate to that. I can, my wife says to me on occasion, she'll say to me, have you done your practice today? And I was like, oh, no, I didn't this morning. She says, no, I can tell.
That's right. That's absolutely right. People surrounding you will tell you. And whichever way, if they don't want you to do it, they'll say, why are you doing all these things if they want you to do it? So they're noticing that as a person, you have changed. So in a way, it's a flagship program.
Yeah.
And I think everybody should invest 20 minutes in their life because the American College of Cardiology talks about investing 20 minutes in physical activity, totaling up to 150 minutes a week. And that is for your body.
Yeah.
And it does something to your brain, but not to the full extent like what these practices can do.
Yeah.
So in a way, this is complementary to both. And so doing mental and physical activities, a sound mind and a sound body. So it just kind of puts you in the right place to do whatever you are wanting to do in this life. So then we moved on and said, okay, what happens to people when they go to these retreats? You know, after in arranging the next one is where they do this experiential retreat. If nothing is experiential, people don't follow these practices. So you need to have this, you have to do it in an engaged way every day. So it doesn't become like a mundane thing, right? Like you sit down and do it as a checklist, but you have to do it in an engaged manner.
Mm-hmm.
And as you keep doing this, suddenly, you know, you will have many kinds of experiences, which you have to really understand what it is all about. You're not chasing experiences, but these experiences gives you that confidence that, okay, I need to do this because I'm progressing here. My first experience of out of mind body was with volunteering after an inner engineering, for an inner engineering program.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know. I'll tell you that whatever you take, you just do it in an engaged manner every day consistently. That is the most important thing. Recently, we did a program to Harvard psychiatrists. There are about 100 of them if you connect all the three hospitals. We made them do Isha Kriya and a guided meditation. So imagine an anesthesiologist talking to psychiatrists about this meditation program.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, I was very surprised. 75% of the people were asking, how do I go about it? How do I sit these practices? What does this mean? What is it? They have very simple answers and questions. So it's not like they're resistant to it. They want to. They want to do it.
Yeah.
And there was one person who was sitting and said, oh, this is a straight path to where I want to go. So you never know which practice will take you to wherever you want to go. You just have to do it in an engaged manner.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most important thing. So coming back to the retreats, we measured blood samples of hundreds of participants before and after retreat just to look at two important molecules. One is called the brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that nourishes all the neuronal activity in your brain, all the neurons structurally. And low levels of those have been mentioned as being associated with several neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's dementia or other non-Alzheimer's dementia or mild cognitive impairment, Parkinson's disease, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an association. I'm not claiming that doing these practices will reverse your disease, but I'm saying that this is one possibility that you can do, that these BDNF levels, it seems to go up by at least 70% before and after these retreats. And we have to do more work in these areas. Hopefully, you know, someone can fund us and we can do more robust work in these areas, measuring them longitudinally. And it seems like these molecules, when they go up, it can at least prevent you from getting into these neurodegenerative diseases. Not only that, low levels of BDNF has also been associated with anxiety and depression. And again, one way to counter that is to elevate these molecules and see whether it reduces or not. Again, we have a proof that people who do this, their levels of anxiety and depression goes down dramatically. So maybe it is mediated through these BDNF levels. The next one is I talked about the joy that people mentioned with the inner engineering practices neuropsychologically. So we wanted to see what causes it. Everybody takes cannabis now. These mushrooms are mushrooming like anything. You know, on your street corners, you have these shops everywhere. They want to have a little bit of that. And you see that endocannabinoids can also be activated with these practices. And these actually bind with the brain and leads to the state of blissfulness or joyfulness. And they're very quick bursts. And then they have a very low, gentle levels of activity after that. Goes up, comes down, and then you have a very small increases. So just so that you don't get used to that high levels that people can get from taking cannabis from outside, brain has the whole body, the whole human system has many checks and balances. It's very difficult for us to decipher everything. Okay, if I switch this off, what else goes up somewhere else, right? So it's important to regulate everything internally rather than taking things from outside. So that's why importance of doing and generating your own endocannabinoids and activating your brain receptors for this rather than taking something from outside. Because brain, our body knows how to moderate levels in this and keep you in a blissful state, but not never become like a blunted sensorium, right? Having that relaxed alertness is very important. So we have seen that with the retreats, about 70% increases. For a comparison, I'll say literature shows that after intense physical activity or an exercise, it goes up by 20 to 30%. And the other thing that people always ask me is, what about sex? Yes, it can, but you'll be like a dead corpse for the next 5 to 7 hours after doing that. And it increases by 20 to 30% only. So here you have a relaxed alertness and you can function. And then there's a 70% increase. In some people, it goes up by 2 to 3 fold. So that's, I'm talking about 200, 300%. So depends on the receptivity. The entire thing about behavioral interventions like this is how receptive you are, how open-minded you are. And then looking at it for its own benefits instead of coming with predefined outcomes in your head. So that's all they ask. Just be open-minded and see what happens. And if you have that kind of receptivity, then it seems like it can go up multiple folds. So that's incredible when you just follow all these things. We have done EEG measures as well. And as I mentioned, the EEG signatures of the alpha theta starts appearing in these participants early on. We just finished a study where we took people from the general population and followed them up over 6 months before they start doing something, immediately after they start doing something, like the inner engineering, and 6 weeks and 6 months. We are looking at their brain, functional MRI, EEG, high density EEG, blood biomarkers, and neuropsychological testing. So a longitudinal change in the brain over 6 months in people who comply and practice. Now we'll hopefully soon see these results, but it's in the phase of analysis and trying to find out who actually complied with it and what does their brain change over a 6 month period. So this is about what has happened in the inner engineering domain itself from the research point of view. And then, you know, we can talk about samima. Samima is the highest level of practices that one can do staying outside the ashram. And it's a much more profound retreat where you are doing meditation as in 12 to 14 hours a day. And that's a very intense practice. In order to qualify for that, you should have done some of these physical postures called asanas, right? Which is what the Western world recognizes as yoga. This is only one limb of yoga, this asanas. You should have done that. You should have done something called shunya or conscious non-doing process to qualify. And then you also have to go for an interview to make sure that they know who you are and what are you trying to do. Why are you going to this samyama practices? Which is almost, if you're in the right phase, you can dissolve yourself, right? So that is from single point concentration to from a 2 point. You know, I'm here, you're here. I'm aware of myself. You're aware of yourself. I'm aware of yourself. Now the single point where both of us merge and then completely everything dissolves. So that kind of dissolution can happen in this samyama retreat. So we have studied that to a certain level you know, about 600 to 800 participants when it happened in 2018.
Hold it there. Hold it there, Dr. Bailey, because I really want to get into this and I want everybody to listen. We're going to have to very quickly go to a commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to find out about this much deeper Samyama practice. So thank you. We'll be back shortly. Don't go away.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So let's get into this kind of next level stuff that you're talking about, which is Samyama. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Yeah. These are deeper states of meditative practice. That does what to your consciousness? Does what to you? Tell me.
Yeah, no. Again, we'll follow the same framework. We talked about neuropsychological testing. So we tested the negativity, positivity, awareness, well-being, joy, bliss. All of them showed tremendous amounts of improvement before and after in over 600 participants from the retreat. So now we're jumping from hundreds to almost, you know, thousands. And that was basically what we found. And not only just immediately after retreat, but those effects, whether you do these practices after that or not, it's sustained for the next 3 months. We know only for 3 months because that's how long we followed. It might have, you know, lasted longer. And we did something in these people at a molecular level, right? So there are genes and there are RNAs, these are messengers that takes the message from the genes and goes to the protein level. Mm-hmm. So that's how the whole thing works, and the proteins affect the targets. Now, the RNA level itself, you can study them directly at the RNA, or you can call it as transcriptomes. It's called transcriptomics. So the message from the gene to the protein level, right? And now we're studying the transcriptomes. One of our collaborators, Dr. Vijay Chandran from University of Florida, led this work, and this is his strength. And what we found was there's a phenomenal change in the body. And one example I'll give you, this was a time at which we had COVID. So we took blood samples from serious meditators who've gone for this retreat, and over 100 people or so. We compared them with controls, as well as there were cohorts that were published in severe COVID people. When you take like STAT genes, this is one example, which are responsible to fight against COVID. Mm-hmm. In severe COVID patients, they were downregulated and they were small in number.
Right.
Whereas in people who did these retreats, they were robust compared to the controls, and they were also highly upregulated. So in a way that it all comes down to this, that you can fight against external invasion like viruses.
Yeah.
And within yourself, you're at a very low inflamed state. Example for that is there's something called C-reactive protein that was just 1/3 in people who did some MR compared to people who didn't do anything, any contemplative practices. So your low inflamed state within your body, otherwise you're stressed, anxious, and depressed, you can always be inflamed. And you can still fight against the external invasion. So that's the optimization of the whole body against that. Now, we took the same blood samples and we are looking at proteins itself. What is happening to proteins? And Dr. Senthil Sadasivam from Pittsburgh, he actually funded this whole trial and he was very instrumental in doing some of these studies. And when we measured these proteins, we can do almost 5,000 to 11,000 proteins from a very small drop of blood. Mm-hmm. And we can look at these inflammation parameters. And you can see that again, at a very fundamental level, cardiovascular system or inflammation system or neurosystem, whichever system you take, it is getting optimized. in a way that is setting up the body to succeed, right? That's what we're finding in many, many ways. The transcriptomics work was published in one of the leading journals called Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences almost 3 years ago. The protein work that we're doing right now, we finished and it's being reviewed by one of the leading journals as well. Hopefully it'll get published this year. Then that is a blood level, right? Then we took it to high density EEG and we looked at what is happening in them in terms of effects at the attention. If you look at Swami Vivekananda, who visited the US many hundred years ago, and he talks about attention is the number one thing. And Sadhguru refines it by saying attention without intention, right? You are paying attention to everything in your life in a given day. And what we're seeing again with these people who do these practices, their attention levels explode. And theta mark or the theta waves in the EEG is one of those which talks about attention. Suddenly your ability to focus on things is exploding. Right now, if you look at the general public, attention is one thing that is lacking in many, many ways. Attention deficit is such a common thing right now that people don't have attention. And that's how social media is exploiting us, because they're putting things with very short span of attention and things that will immediately reward you. So this attention is exploding. Then we looked at functional MRI. Let's say that I tell you, don't think about a monkey. That's the same thing you're thinking about for the next half an hour. And Sadhguru talks about it. Many people talk about it. And how do you turn that monkey brain into something that you can tell it to do what you want it to do, right? There are three main networks in the brain. The first one is called the default mode network. And it spans from the front of the brain all the way to the back of the brain. And this is always active. That probably is responsible for mental diarrhea. And a recent functional MRI work done by somebody else, it shows that it is constantly active, probably responsible for a lot of these rumination that is happening within us. And the next network is the task network, that is the executive network. Right now you're hosting the radio show and you're very focused on the task. And so when that task goes up, the default mode network goes down. And so the rumination tends to go down. That's why many, many of us want to do task all the time, because we don't want to have that rumination process. We want to be doing something all the time. And there's something that switches these two called salience network in the middle. And it seems like doing these retreats loosens up the activity within the network called the default mode network. So within the network, it's not very well connected. When something is not very well connected, that network is not going to have a lot of strength. Yeah. It's just going to, and that grip over you is loosened. And so you're not going to be having constant rumination. So that's what we are finding even with the Shunya meditation study. And now the long range connection between different parts of the brain, right? For example, a simple example people can understand is, you know, you learned something today and you have it in your immediate memory. And then over a period of time, that becomes a hippocampal memory. Hippocampus is responsible for memory in yourself. Over a long range, that memory goes into cerebral cortex and becomes a very well-set memory. Like some of the childhood memories that you have, it can never be erased. Something is always within you. This long-range connections is very well established after these retreats, that you can actually transfer information to these long-range storages. And so that is what is happening. And that's basically what happens in a deep restorative sleep. And the deep restorative sleep you can get with this kind of retreats, it's probably doing much more things. I'll tell you, there was a French PhD Tibetan monk, and they basically examined his brain. And what they found was his network in the brain was super high. It's like a lot of organized highways, not chaotic, but organized highways. And you can think of that, like probably even if you do in you, for who have done it for 15 years, you probably will have that as well, where you become very, you become very perceptive. When you become very perceptive, then you start noticing, you become very present. When you become very present, that's what we want to be, right?
Yeah.
So you are not loose talking a lot, but you're receiving a lot. When you receive a lot, you perceive a lot. And You know, one simple example is somebody who did this in an engineering program. He's an ENT surgeon, my colleague, and he was saying that, but I've been, you know, going from my home to work for the last 20 years, but this is the first time I'm seeing this big water tank right in front of my eyes. I haven't seen it for 20 years. So what is happening? You're living in your brain, but you just come out of it and you start perceiving everything around you.
Yeah.
Again, I'm paraphrasing Sadhguru here. He talks about life as two things, right? One is the profoundness of experience, and second is the impact you create. And he says that there's nothing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You die today, tomorrow you're topsoil. And how do we create profoundness of experience? When you think of brain as a tool, and instead of, you know, the Western concepts of brain as a tool for consciousness, but brain as a tool to perceive consciousness. Again, this is my personal conversation, Sadhguru. What if brain is a telescope through which you see the sky and you're not seeing the sky itself? And so now it becomes a confounder, right? You don't know whether the brain is responsible for consciousness or is there something else that it is perceiving. I mean, this is one of the favorite things I always want to talk about is we all have dogs at home. So I have one at home. Mm-hmm. You see how they're, when you look at their face, the front of the face is like a slope, right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. when you look at a human, it's like a straight line, right? The mm-hmm. front of the face is like that. And what is occupying that space is the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex in the brain is something very unique to human beings. And it is something that can do so many things. And we have this cerebral cortex, which can perceive a lot of things. And these kind of brain finessing tools like the meditation can actually enhance your perception. And now you can, with that, you can have profoundness of experience in life. You know, like the wet soil when you walk on it after a rain, you know, how it smells, or, you know, the trees during the spring or when the leaves are falling. It just, so suddenly you realize that nature has so much of bounty to give us and there's so much to experience. And not just that, even this interaction that we are happening, everything is very valuable. And the second is the impact that you create. You have a radio host and you're trying to take this message to many people. Somebody else is doing something else and so on and so forth. So when you have this kind of understanding, suddenly whatever you do will have a meaning for the larger good. And mm-hmm. when that happens, the impact is just multiplying. So I think brain as a tool is finessed with this kind of things. There is also another researcher from Harvard across the pond. And basically, she did show that somebody who's doing regular contemplative practices, this was Buddhist practices, I think, the brain thickness goes up. When the brain thickness goes up, you have more substrate. What happens with aging, right? When we keep growing older, the brain starts thinning. Mm-hmm. So there's not enough substrate within us. When we do meditation, it can restore some of that. So now you have a thickened brain, you have highly functionally connected brain, and then you have a brain that is soaked in bliss molecules that I just talked about, anandamide and the mm-hmm. brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
Mm-hmm.
And in another parallel work for people who have done the Samyama, they have something called refresher courses called Samyama Sadhana Retreats. We took those people and then they go through 60 days of intense practices, were engaged, and they don't miss out any practices. And when we looked at them, what is known as brain age, computing brain age, compared, this algorithm was derived from 20,000 participants from Mass General Hospital. So one of my colleagues actually derived, he's a neurologist, and we used that computation in these meditators.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it looks at your sleep EEG pattern over the whole night. And it has several parameters within it. And it showed that people who do this meditation, they're 6 years younger. So you have by brain age.
Nice.
You have a thicker brain, you have a functionally connected brain, younger brain, soaked in these bliss molecules. Now, voila, you have a brain which is very optimized tool. And with that, you can enhance your profoundness of experience and impact. And there, I think this whole transition of Samyama process, actually all the work that we have done, comes down to that final thing that they talk about is profoundness of experience and mm-hmm. also the impact that you create.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I could listen to you all day. We are running out of time, unfortunately, so we're not going to be able to do that. Let's look at something very, very practical then. So what would you recommend for somebody that's listening now? you know, maybe they've tried meditation, maybe they haven't, but what would you recommend right now that people can go and do? And just tell us in just in 1 or 2 minutes, and then we'll play out with a bit of music.
Yeah. We have listened to all these benefits, but meditation is very fundamental to look at ourselves in a very deeper way. It's almost turning a light on within your body.
Yeah.
Don't miss this opportunity. And there are several free practices that are available right now, right? And I'll say Miracle of Mind is probably one of the things that you can start. Engage with it for 7 minutes and start there, set the tone for the day and finesse your tool that is so-called brain and do the same things that you're doing with a different meaning and purpose and understanding. And that is probably an opportunity that you'll never want to miss.
So Miracles of Mind, just so everybody knows, I've just downloaded it. It's an app, Miracle of Mind, and it's a Sadhguru, it's red. You can go to any app store and download it. Wasn't there something like 15 million downloads within the first hour it was launched or something?
Yeah, something like that. And many people actually talk about that as something that they cannot live
without.
And also, we have done a couple of research papers on it. We examined 1,500 people. For example, the last 1 month, things might have happened to you. And after you do this meditation, you look at the whole past in a different frame, different lens.
Yeah.
So it's a cognitive reappraisal. That's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. You've been an absolute joy to have on. Thank you very much. This has been one of those conversations that lands somewhere deeper than just information. It touches people. And the science that you're doing at Harvard is genuinely changing what we understand about the human brain and what's possible for us all, which is amazing. You've told us where listeners can go and get themselves a practice. Where can people find out a little bit more about you? Is there so that if they want to follow some of the programs you've talked about, the research that you're doing, how do people find out?
They just have to type in BIDMC, that is Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, as in BIDMC, and SCCP is Sadhguru Center for Conscious Planet, and they'll find me.
Lovely, fantastic. So I think many people will do that. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Bala. You've been
amazing.
Thank you, Jarvis. That's all from Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio today. I would love to get you back on the show again. I'd even love to put myself forward to be part of those studies because I think it would be really interesting to see what else is going on. We're going to end the show with a little bit of music from something that I use in my mornings for meditation. It is by the Isha Musicians. It's called Bloom. This is going to take you to the end of the show. So, Dr. Bala, thank you very much indeed.
And thank
I hope you.
You
enjoy this music as much as we do. Have a little meditation for a minute before you move on to your next task. Thank you very much. I'll see you next
thank
week.
You. Thank you. Thank you.